General Motors on safari. Here is adventure. Excitement. And danger. General Motors and their dealer organization throughout Southern Africa are proud to present another program in their current series, bringing you the African bushveld of today and yesterday in dramatized fact, fiction, and true life documentary. General Motors on safari.
In the early 20s, Fort Rosebery was still an isolated outpost in the northeast province of northern Rhodesia. The Copper Belt, which was just beginning to blossom, lay 240 miles to the southwest, and Elizabethville, as she was then called, was 120 miles due west. 11 Europeans were resident in Fort Rosebery in those days: a missionary, his wife and small daughters, three traders, two of whom were married, and four government officials. Now, the missionary had a right-hand man called Daniel, who preached in all the outlying villages. Daniel was a great favorite, not because he preached, but because he organized a supply of fresh fish from Lake Bangwelu. Bream were plentiful in the lake, which was only 42 miles away, and the lay preacher ran a very profitable business, working with two bicycle men who carried huge loads of dried fish for the natives and fresh bream for the Europeans. Along the route of the bicycling fish bringers lay a village called Mvengi, and it was here that the trouble first started. The Bangwelu business boomed until the day of Mvengi's lions. On several occasions, Fort Rosebery's fish cyclists were treed by Mvengi's lions. Once they sat up among the branches for a whole day, and by the time they reached the 11 Europeans who had come to rely upon lake fish for breakfast, the whole catch stank to high heaven. And then the killing started. A young mother and a child were first taken. They were hoeing in the cassava patch in Mvengi's village. The next night they struck again. A fully grown man was taken in the night from his hut where he was sleeping with his family. This was 20 miles away in Kimono's village. After that, the killers struck fast and often, and the whole area was up in arms. There was no more fish. The district commissioner at Rosebery and another official tried to hunt the beasts down, but without any success. The missionary sent Daniel, whose business was ruined, to the various villages to pray with the stricken people and to comfort them.
Come in. Oh, Richard, come in. Shut the door again, will you? Yeah, I know it's hot, but leave it open and the flies come in. Shut it and we'll sweat. I don't know which is worse. Whew. A nice, cold, wet and windy Manchester. That's what I'd like at this moment. Flies come in the window anyway. Might just well leave the door. What can I do for you?
Another poor woman was killed early this morning.
Oh, no. That's
14, if I'm not mistaken.
14 deaths and no fish for 5 weeks. I'm not being flippant, Reverend. Just trying to cheer myself up, make light of the matter. Oh, blast. We'd better go out again, I suppose. I'll leave Adams here, take Gerald Moore, and we'll stay out.
There's something else, too, Peter. Daniel.
Daniel? Your Daniel? Don't tell me. He's been...
No, he... At least I hope not. He's overdue. I sent him to Candy's village. That's where the little girl was killed the night before last. But I expected him to stop at Mvengi's village on the way back, you know, just to hold a short service. Those poor people have been sorely tried.
Yes, I know. And Daniel's not come back. When did you expect him back from Mvengi's?
This morning, at the very latest. Well, he would have left Mvengi's village at 11. Yes, about 11. But he should have been here by midday at the latest.
Hmm. Well, midday isn't this morning, Richard. He probably had a puncture or something.
He's a very fast cyclist, Peter.
Yes. Well, that doesn't stop the beggar from getting a puncture, though, does it? Puncture. Mark my words. Only four now. He's a bit late, that's all. Don't you worry. Nothing will harm your boy, Richard. He'll turn up. He's got to. Without him, we'll never taste a fresh lump of fish again.
You're a very hard man, Mr. Wallace. You talk of fish while 14 good people have been killed by those monsters.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Richard. Stop pontificating. You're the only human missionary I've ever met. But as soon as you mount your high horse, you sound like all the rest. Sometimes I think you fellows love a bit of blood and thunder. Suddenly you've got a purpose again. No, I didn't mean that. I'm sorry. But don't call me Mr. Wallace. It makes me feel stupid. My name's Peter. Look, 14 people dead can't take away my fondness for fresh Lake Bream, can it? Anyway, Daniel will come wheeling that bike of his into the fort any time now. You see, lions don't kill men like him. They see his halo and run the other way. Will you stop looking shocked?
I'm just a bit worried, that's all, Peter. I'm very fond of Daniel, and though I love all the people, Daniel will sometimes I love him like a son.
Well, will you stop apologizing for it? You don't have to qualify everything. You love Daniel because he's a jolly fine native who helps you 15 hours a day, is pretty holy, rides a bicycle well, and brings us fish. Just stop worrying. You'll hear his bell any minute from now.
Where was Daniel? Fallen prey to Mvengi's lions? Not quite. This is what happened to Daniel. Daniel Umlabala was a strange sort of native. In these enlightened times, he would have gone to high school and then to university. He was clever. He was honest. He was even a businessman. He was quite splendid. A very Christian gentleman, too. He never spoke in his tribal tongue, except when visiting villages where English was unknown. He was very proud of his English, was Daniel. Even in moments of dire stress, such as a buckled front bicycle wheel, he had been heard to mutter a prayer to the Almighty for help in keeping his temper in perfect English. Until the morning he had set out from Kundi's people to hold a small service at Mbengi, he had never known real stress. Before leaving Kundi, he had refilled his hurricane lamp with paraffin from the mission supply, which was left in the headman's care for the preacher's use when he was on tour. The lamp hung from the handlebar of the bicycle as he came through the bush towards the footpath from Kundi to Mvengi. Daniel stopped fast. Why? Because in his path lay a big male lion. Close by the male was a lioness. Behind them, sleeping, were two half-grown cubs and another lioness. Daniel's eyes bulged. He shut them both for an instant and then opened them again. Lions. And then the larger of the females saw him. Good, Daniel. Good. You're off your bicycle now. What happens next?
lot of lions. Plenty of lions. Big lions. Please.
You don't need the cycle, Daniel. You can't ride away from a lion. A lion can run faster than you can pedal. Suddenly the man runs fast. His destination, a tree. Not a very tall tree, but a tree. He wheels the bicycle with him and then throws the thing aside. The lions are taken by surprise and watch this phenomenon for an instant. And their delay saves the native's life. If a large black-maned lion could be said to wear any expression on its face other than cat-like fierceness, cat-like hate, cat-like hunger, or cat-like drowsiness, this lion had learnt from somewhere or another surprise. And I mean surprise, real surprise. For you see, no one had run from him before. They'd all stood still and trembled and whimpered and usually closed their eyes to avoid seeing their own deaths. The lion's mate was surprised too, but her surprise was more mundane. She couldn't understand why, suddenly, this meal was no longer within reach of claw and teeth. And the meal? The meal had climbed, probably faster than any man had ever climbed before. The meal was surprised too. Surprised to find that it was still whole and good in limb. Here's the fine thing. Five lions, five cats, three large, two not so large. They have slept, all of them, and after sleep, food. It's reasonable. The younger ones are angriest. Why is the food no longer within reach, they ask? Why does it stare down at them from the leaves and branches, huge eyes popping? The lioness, the larger of the two, true mate to Blackmane, loses interest in Daniel. She glares round. She vents her rage on the only man thing there is within her reach, the shining black bicycle. They're tearing your blankets, Daniel. You no longer have warm blankets in which to sleep when the nights are cold. Why? Lions can't eat blankets. It seems unfair. Careful, Daniel. You're safe for the moment. No unnecessary movement, though. Branches can crack, break like bones. And if another, the one that offers you safety, should break, crack like thunder, you will plummet down. What's that you've been carrying with you up the tree? A hurricane lamp? How did you manage that? Get rid of it, Daniel. No, don't throw it at the black-maned one. A hurricane lamp won't hurt the beast. Hang it there. That's right. On that branch. Perhaps if it becomes dark and your siege continues, you may use it to light the arena with.
Go away! Go away! It's my bicycle. But go from this place. Dear God, save me. I humbly pray to you. Save your servant this day. Save your servant from the teeth of the lion.
The black man has remembered the man. He hadn't really forgotten him. Clawing bicycles and tearing blankets is, of course, women's work. Hauling the meal down from the safety of the tree, that was the work of the king. He stretches himself beautifully. His movements are poetry. He bares his fangs, yellow fangs. He claws gently at the bark of the tree.
He needs to climb up to me. He is looking into my eyes. He is big. Bigger than the Buena Wallace shot in the mission compound years ago. But bigger than that one. His mane is very black. Buena Wallace would be pleased with such a mane as that across his chest. Buena Wallace, come to see the black mane for your chance. Shoot the black mane. Bahai. Five lions and one Daniel. This is not a fair. Buena Wallace would say it was not the cricket.
If any person follows me down the path down which I have traveled, they shall be dead at once. Completely dead. Dear Lord, I praise thee and thy name. But do not allow any man or woman
or little children to come along the path. For I do believe these lions, they are most hungry and mean to eat someone.
What's this? They're going to sleep, Daniel, see? The black-maned one is stretching himself out in your tree shade. His eyes are closed. He means to sleep.
There are many trees. Many trees. And every tree would be better for lions to sleep under than this one.
The young ones as well. And the smaller lioness. Sleeping now. So quickly. That's because all animals are innocent, you see. It's only man who tosses and turns and plans and curses and is often afraid of sleep. Animals? Ah, there's the rub. The old lady, what's she doing? Ah, she's not sleeping. She's watching the path. On sentry go. We saw no arrangements made. She's taken on the duty of guard with no prompting. She lies and watches the path. Perhaps they've forgotten about you, Daniel. No, it wouldn't be possible for you to climb down the other side and run. It's mid-afternoon now, Daniel. You've been up this tree for close on 4.5 hours. Wouldn't you like to climb down and run and leap, roll in the grass like a kitten, cramped up this tree, Daniel? Well, man wasn't born to crouch on a branch, trembling for hour after hour. There comes a time.
Peter Wallace.
Richard. Any sign of that man of yours, Richard?
Still hasn't come back, and it's 4:45. I fear the worst.
Why?
Why?
Yes, why fear the worst?
No.
Surely the fellow's been late before.
No, never. He's always on time.
Strange sort of native, that.
But it's getting so late. If only we knew where he is.
If only you knew where Daniel is. Why, Daniel's all right, Reverend Alsop. Never you fear. He's up a tree, surrounded by lions, that's all.
Some poor, unsuspecting person is walking this way. Very obvious.
Dear Lord, please guide me. What must I do? Should I jump from this tree onto the lion's back, and when they growl and savage me, my cries will be heard, and those people will run away, and I shall have saved them?
Don't be stupid, Daniel.
No! That would be a stupid thing to do.
All the lions are awake now.
Go away! Do not come this way! There are lions here, and they plan to eat me! If you do not wish to be eaten also, you must run. Run as fast as your legs can carry you away from the danger. Run away! Lions! These very lions! Lions! Lions!
They shall run until the headmen and many warriors will come with spears, and the lions will all run away. I shall be saved. It was good that those people came near this place. I have saved them. And in return, they shall now save me.
Poor Daniel, you deserve help. Oh, yes, you deserve it. But men do not always get what they deserve or what they want. Time passes and the shadows lengthen and no sound from the people of Mvengi's village. You see, Daniel, life is good. Life is sweet and good when you are alive and strong, when you have a wife or a husband, when you have children, little smiling children. So if you are walking through the forest along a well-worn path, and some fool cries lion into the African air, and the tenor of his cries convinces you that there are lions abroad. And don't forget, the handiwork of Mvengi's lions has been on public display upon many an occasion. What do you do, knowing all this, and having all this to care for and love. Why, you know as well as I do, Daniel, you run and fast, spreading the warning as you go. And when you reach your village, still with two arms and two legs, you gather to you your little ones and the woman who bore them, or the father who loved you and made them. And you fasten the door of your hut and wait for a new day. That's what you do, Daniel. You don't go looking for the foolish man who warned you of danger. What's this? What's this? But lions don't climb trees. They do, though, occasionally. Poor Daniel. The big black-maned male is the one. He is the one who is hungriest. First, he appears to be sharpening his claws on the bark. Now, he tries an experimental leap, a heave. Daniel can feel the tree shake. He can smell the stinking breath. Ah, yes, and now Daniel notices something. The hurricane lamp, remember? The hurricane lamp he brought into the tree with him. Carefully, he reaches for the lamp, and never taking his eyes from the beasts, he unscrews the cap. Daniel pours the paraffin in a solid stream down onto the lion's head. The brute blinks and licks at the paraffin, but doesn't jump away. He stands again on his hind legs. His front paws not far from the man in the tree. He doesn't enjoy the taste of paraffin, but it is soon forgotten. There is hunger in those eyes, those yellow eyes. Bad matches these, Daniel. You buy them at the mission stall. You must speak to them about poor quality goods if you ever see the mission again. Better, Daniel. Shelter the flame with your other hand. But watch, don't fall. Daniel, careful, Daniel. Many more matches. Carefully. The shadows are lengthening. Drop the match. Down, Daniel. Onto the lion. Yes! The match includes the lion and the mane is immediately alight. The beautiful mane. The beast springs back. He thinks his comrades have hurt him. In anger and pain, he turns and with flailing talons rips the lioness open from shoulder to back. She, in order, flies at one of the young animals and with one swipe of her paw kills him at once. The big male, in agony now, rushes into the forest. Here's a beacon! The others follow him, running and leaping and snarling and tearing at one another as they run. They follow their furious lord, seeking the river where water, cool and caressing, will heal, will kill the burning and the pain. And Daniel, his face wears an expression of foolish surprise, like a medieval clown, eyebrows raised in the darkening. Sorrow and relief, an aftermath of long fear. He blinks and settles down for a long wait in the gathering darkness. For having won his battle, he must be patient before making the retreat. Tonight's story was a true one. It was told to me 5 years ago by Richard Alsop, the missionary whose helper the resourceful Daniel had been. A few weeks after the incident, the lions were shot one by one. As far as I know, Alsop's still alive. I think he retired to the United Kingdom only a few years back, aged 86. Nobody seems sure about what happened to Daniel. He was quite a hero for a long time. The story of what he did with the paraffin and the matches reached far and wide. Only 2 years ago, I was in the Sudan, and a fellow in a bar came up to me, introduced himself, and after two drinks, started to tell me the story of how a bright young native chap called Dunstan, down in Kenya, had poured petrol all over a lion who was mauling him and blew him up. Well, That's what happens to stories after a few years. I think the missionary's account's the true one, somehow. Good night.
Join us again next week for another story of the African Bushbelt. It might be fact, it might be fiction, in General Motors on Safari. Brought to you by General Motors South African, manufacturers of Cadillac, Buick, Oldsmobile, Pontiac, Chevrolet, Acadian, Beaumont, Vauxhall, Opel, Holden, Bedford, and GMC Motor Vehicles. That's all.